B-Pod Studios.
Sports Hub.
Hello.
Hey.
The Bruins and Celtics will both be back in action tonight after taking yesterday off. The Bees visit the Florida Panthers at the front end of a back-to-back on the road. Curtis Lazar is expected back. Craig Smith is out. Judd Surratt and Bob Beers have the pregame at 6:30 and the faceoff at 7 here on 98.5. The Sports Hub. Linus Ullmark will start in net. The Green, meanwhile, will try to make it 3 wins in a row, and they open up a home-and-home with the Washington Wizards at TD Garden. Sean Grandy and Cedric Maxwell have the pregame at 7 and the tip-off at 7:30 over on 105.7 WROR. Al Horford is probable after missing the team's last game, a win on Monday night. Romeo Langford and his sore calf muscle are questionable. In other NHL news, Blackhawks president Stan Bowman resigned yesterday. This is after an independent investigation revealed that a minor league player was sexually assaulted by a video coach back in 2010, and the club, with knowledge, failed to respond at the time. The franchise was also fined $2 million. Former Patriots safety Patrick Chung arrested and charged with assault and battery yesterday. This is in connection with an alleged incident with a family member. He was released on $10,000 personal surety. The current Patriots will be back at practice this afternoon with a game coming up on the road Sunday against the L.A. Chargers. Special teamer Harvey Longhi placed on injured reserve. Atlanta beat Houston in game one of the World Series 6-2. And the New England Revolution face Colorado in Foxborough tonight. We'll have it on our HD2 channel beginning at 7. Sports Hub headlines are brought to you by East Boston Savings Bank, in your neighborhood since 1848. Looking to finance a home mortgage? Visit ebsb.com for a location near you. I'm John Wallach of Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Your next update at 6:30.
Football is more than the game. Free agency, the draft, training camp, all the play-by-play.
To the pylon with a dive. Touchdown, Patriots!
And no one covers it like we do. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Fred, hello!
Hey, guys.
Hello!
Hey.
I don't think you're supposed to be taking walks from the beach.
Ba-do-zap, ba-do-zap.
Opinions is a rectum.
Let's go, Red Sox!
Season 4, your mom's a whore. Pizza time.
Hit me like a bow, bow, bow.
Wall dick, well, yeah.
She made out with my dad.
I have 4 recliners. He has 3.
Hello! Welcome to the show.
Drugs is no good for you, to you.
And when you think about the dilemma, right then,
then no one ever wins. The always lose.
We just, the situation.
Stay away.
When the Lakers...
Good morning, everybody. Good morning. We are the Toucher and Rich Radio Program. Town Fair Tire Studios. You can watch us on Twitch at twitch.tv or in the Twitch app. Follow 98.5 The Sports Hub to do that. And you can call us at 617-779-0985. And you should stay away from drugs, as you heard. That song itself has saved many, many people from a lifetime of debilitating drug addiction.
He's singing it to children, little children, please, because there's nothing the children love to listen to more than a old bluesman.
Yeah. Well, the blues is, it depends how much money you have. It appears that if you're a billionaire, the blues hits you right where it counts.
Is this the James Dolan type of blues man who likes to wear the super cool fedora hat? It shows that he's down with the bluesman.
It's like the Ernie Bach, the James Dolan blues guy.
The Jim Irsay. Although he's a little more into the alternative rock of the Counting Crows.
Yeah, Duritz has a message that he can dig himself into.
By the way, is there anybody who just looks completely different as a human being than the lead singer of the Counting Crows without a beard? Have you seen him?
Oh yeah. He looks like a nice Jewish guy. He looks like a dude that's dropping his kid off at a Metro West practice.
The only person I can think of that looks kind of funnier without a beard is Matt Patricia.
Matt Patricia just is a big dork. I mean, there's but Adam Duritz, it must be exhausting having that much stuff going on. I was watching a video on Facebook because I'm old and that's how I consume media. And it was Guns N' Roses live from this record store, right when Appetite came out.
Oh, wow.
And, it's taken them forever to get it together. But regardless, they play, I think they play One in a Million, which I guess had been written when Appetite came out. And they have so much crap on,
bangles
and all that stuff.
Look like a bunch of Johnny Depps.
Johnny Depp, I've told you, it's fascinating. I mean, just the amount of rings that he has to put on every morning, just the amount of accoutrements, the frickin' frack that he has to put on every morning. But Adam Duritz to because if you're ugly, and Adam Duritz is ugly, and I'm ugly. And but if you're ugly, to the commitment to getting enough happening, where Howard Stern has the kind of the same thing to get back in the day, the excruciating the poof of his hair up like that, and all the crap you have to wear, it's all distractions. To you got to wear cowboy hats and stuff like that. Oh, okay, jumping all around.
Okay.
Cowboy hats though. All right, so the Masked Singer, my wife and kids, my wife and daughter watch it, which means that it's on, which means that I watch it. Have you seen the season with the banana?
That is what's his name? The Terry Bradshaw, right?
No, it is a man by the name of Brett Michaels.
No, I did not see that.
Brett Michaels cannot sing. It's really embarrassing.
I've seen him live a couple times recently.
Yeah,
he was good.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether or not that's going through a PA, like a track or something like that.
Well, I think that the Poison songs are pretty much geared towards Brett's vocal range, because he does Knock It on Heaven's, he cannot sing. And it's humiliating, because they're the people that they're guessing are terrible non-singers. I think it's a comedian. I gotta guess it's a comedian.
It's Jaleel White. Yeah, it's Urkel.
Exactly. They're Jeff Dunham. I think that that might have been a guess. It's Jeff Dunham. And can you imagine if you're Brett Michaels and you're losing to Rob Gronkowski or whoever you're losing to, and you're a real singer. He fancies himself a singer, but at the end of that, because when you strip down all the running around and the familiarity with the songs and all that stuff, it's just your voice.
Yeah.
And so as dumb as the Masked Singer is, it was even my wife and daughter were wow, he's really bad at singing.
Well, now I got to hear this. Now I want to hear it, because you're right. When you see him, you're just used to hearing his voice in these songs. But although you can tell when someone can pull it off or not, I give you Vince Neil.
Yeah. Who obviously I mean, come on. It's not Vince Neil.
Well, I give you David Lee Roth. We've played those clips before where he can't even sing.
But he does, when he has been unmasked, he does Knock It on Heaven's Door, which I would say is probably one of the easier songs in the world to sing.
Sure.
And he's got to stop and start talking to the audience during it and stuff like that. It's inherently, he knows he's an entertainer and not a singer. So as dumb as the Masked Singer is, and as much as I can't stand it, and as fascinated as I am is that Kim Jung guy has got a family that he's created with his own fluid.
Times in our lives, we all have
lean on me.
Yeah.
We all have socks.
tomorrow. But if we are wise, then we all know there's always tomorrow. You can lean on me when you're not strong.
Dave was telling me how the judges stood up and were like, oh, my God.
Well, they were waving back and forth like this.
The hot one puts her hand on her heart.
Nicole Scherzinger.
And during everything, and is like, oh, my God. And Mouse, oh, my God. Like, Gronkowski was up there, and they're like, oh, well, this is fun. And then they really toss Kim Jong around. Like, that's his name, right? Kim Jong?
Ken Jong.
They really toss him around like there's nobody's business. He's like... He is the Rip Taylor of that show. He is the Jim J. Bullock of that show. I mean, they just like are tossing him around.
Is Alan Thicke's kid still on it?
Yes. Thicke, he's the one all the way over on the left. I've seen this show, too.
And he has collaborated with everyone under Sunrich.
Really?
He is the collaborations. Because he's like, you know, I just worked with... you know, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, huh? And what? Like, who are you working with?
Collaborated with Pitbull. I knew you'd be excited about that.
Oh, did he really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean...
Well, that's... Nick Kroll did a character about Pitbull who lived in a green screen prison where all he did was... But he was senior... What was he? Oh, senior cameo or senior...
Where he just, like, shows up for, like, you know, 10 seconds on everybody's album.
Yeah, there's a Kroll show. And then he has a foot fetish. Yeah, he goes, I'm strapped here in my green screen prison.
So I watched this special about Pitbull. Remember, it was the one about how he was like this big investor that they did?
Yes. Which
was hysterical. But there was one thing that I found really interesting about it. You joke about how many things he guests, does a little cameo on. He travels with this mini recording studio, which is basically like a little box and a microphone that has like a windscreen around it or like a little sound buffer. And in hotel rooms, he'll get sent... like scripts saying, here, you need to guest star on this album. Dan, and he'll record it in his hotel room and just send it, and that will be the next single.
Senior Feature is the character that Kroll does about Pitbull. And by the way, he has a foot fetish in it, too. He just throws that in there.
So that's how much he like really tries when it comes to doing these cameos. He does it in a hotel room, like between gigs.
Yeah, that's Senior Feature. And he's like, ha ha! Yeah, I'm trapped in this green screen prison. Ha ha! And so, like, every time that Kroll had these ongoing, like, skits that would go, you know, it's a variety of skits, but they would be ones that had a story that went out through episodes. Whenever there was a singer, like, he had this boy band guy from Canada, and then he had Bobby Bottle Service that went country.
Mm-hmm.
He would eventually, senior feature, would show up as the guy who did the guest appearance.
Okay.
Yeah, Pitbull, Pitbull knew. Pitbull, I have to imagine, he goes, I'm not talented. I know I'm not talented. And I got to ride
this. Well, at least the guy can dance, Fred.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but he danced, he danced like 007. He's like in the sky. He's like, yeah, like, because he's in a suit.
He's just like, yeah. He just rhymed baby 8 times.
Mm-hmm. All right. Dan's telling me there's a lot of swearing. I'm surprised it's not censored, but maybe on YouTube they don't censor it. Because, all right, then you can find Going Country.
Mommy got an ass like a donkey with a monkey, look like King Kong. Welcome to the crib, real fire. That's what it is with the women down here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Real fire.
So anyway, so Brett, so you got it. All right. So here's Senior Feature from the Kroll Show.
I come from Florida, you know, Fort Lauderdale. But because I like to feet, I call it Foot Lauderdale.
And if you haven't guessed it already, Senior Feature loves to feet.
Love it. Love to feet. Love to smell feet. I'm the king of my own digital kingdom. I'm in a green screen prison. Senior Feature.
In an effort to maximize his guest star appearances, Feature lives, works, and sleeps on a green screen set that he designed.
Anyone I collaborate with, Brian Lacroix, I don't want to go to bay. You know, he in Canada. I'm in this green screen prison. I can be on that show, no problem. People ask me all the time, Senior Feature, how do you get from Fort Lauderdale all the way to a green screen prison? And I always say the same thing, man. her work. Sing your feature.
Just like how randomly I threw in that he loves feet.
It's because of Foot Lauderdale.
Yeah, Foot Lauderdale, right. Because he loves feet.
And by the way, D.A.'s loved feet far longer than the Kroll Show had been on.
He is a huge fan of feet.
Long before the Kroll Show. That was he did not steal that from the Kroll Show. All right, Rich, what is coming up?
Well, the World Series starts with a feat of athleticism.
Hey!
That basically someone in the Braves yesterday said, Curt Schilling, you can suck it.
Yeah. How long after he got out of the game did they announce his leg was broken?
Pretty quick.
Okay.
Yeah, really quick, as a matter of fact. Like, I think it was one of those things, too. Well, we'll talk about it, but it was one of those things, too, where I didn't realize it happened at the time. I watched it. And then
he just kind of limped off because I thought he turned his ankle like throwing a pitch.
Because you can get a microfracture and have so much adrenaline that it's not going to bother you.
He's out for the season.
No, I understand that because then once it all calms down, like you could really screw up your leg.
Yeah.
But you can get a microfracture that adrenaline. I mean, I've broken stuff and like haven't realized it and then started vomiting all over the place once the adrenaline wore off. But we'll see. This is all I'm saying is this isn't Campbell in the playoffs.
No.
Playing on a snapped leg.
No, it doesn't.
When his leg was snapped down the middle.
Well, that was a little different.
Well, that was also just an amazing, unbelievable, couldn't believe. You're never going to see that again.
Like his femur had like cracked in half.
And remember, it was a 5-on-3, wasn't it?
Yes, I was there.
It was a power play. Yeah, he was killing a penalty.
I was there, you know, no play-by-play, and you knew his leg was broken.
Like, well, he could hardly move.
No, he had to hold himself up with his stick.
Yeah.
So everything. So I'm not impressed by any of this because everything is Campbell breaking his leg. All right, we'll be right back.
Toucher and Rich, 98.5 The Sports.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Get out of here. Come on. Don't listen to them. Listen to no one.
Don't listen to them. You're going to ruin your career.
Toucher and Rich.
You can't listen to those people. They're maniacs.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Recapping what you missed is Toucher and Rich.
We're Toucher and Rich. All right. I was talking to John about this off the air. And I just... This is not something I'd reach out to anyone to say. This is just, but I thought it, and I will say it in case anyone is feeling the same way. All right, so I have 2 Twitter accounts. One is locked and private that I have never tweeted out of, which is what I use. Okay, but I don't know I'm not positive the password for that. On my laptop, you know when you put in a password on your laptop and it gives you the option of using the one that they suggest?
Yeah.
Like, and it's like super long and everything. So I use that for my Fred Toucher Twitter account, but that's the one that's up on my laptop now.
Yeah.
So the Fred Toucher account, there's some people I feel like if I unfollow them, they'd know and they'd get like upset, like it would hurt their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, Dan Roach has got to take a real, real long step back from Twitter.
Why?
Because I don't follow him on my one account.
Yeah.
I follow him on my Fred Toucher account, and it's a bombardment. It's a bombardment of Dan Roach. It's my entire timeline is Dan Roach.
Really? I haven't noticed that.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know how many people you follow, but I think I follow 65 people on that Twitter account.
Oh, I follow significantly more than
that. Yeah, so you are used to the chaos. Mine is like 65 people.
I follow at least 3 or 4 times that much, so it's not a beating for me.
I don't even know how you can sift through all that information, but nonetheless... It's a bombardment of Roach all over the place. They have Ted Lasso gifts and everything. I mean, this Ted Lasso stuff. He's got to take a step back. But John thinks that now that Ted Lasso has come out, that Dan is forcing the issue a little bit.
I think he's got a persona, and I'd be guilty of the same thing. He's got a persona now, and maybe he's pushing it a little bit. Yes.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, he's the gosh golly gee Willikers guy.
He's always been the gosh golly gee Willikers guy.
But I think that this show...
I mean,
show...
we have a million clips from his telling bad jokes when he was on with Don Orsillo and Jerry Remy, Tooth Hurdy. I mean, he's dad joke guy. We have I'm a Bugs Bunny guy. I mean, we have a million. We've done complete and total bits
this
before
show,
Ted Lasso
though,
ever existed about mass everywhere.
Right.
And,
yes, I understand. This show, though, helped create that persona.
Oh, no. He was that even before
but
our show.
But we cemented he was that way, but we cemented him as that guy.
Sure.
So we made him that guy.
Right.
We branded him as that guy.
We put a bullhorn to who he was.
And that's my point.
But he's always been
that
way.
But John is saying that he's leaning, and now he's always been that way. We've put a bullhorn to it. But now that with the popularity of Ted Lasso, not that he hasn't always been this way. No one's saying he's faking it, Rich. But since that Ted Lasso has come out, that he's being like he's like super hyper to like be like I'm like that guy, like the guy you all like I'm like that guy. That was John's opinion.
Yes,
opinion that I tend to agree with.
Okay, what was the thing that you saw that made you think that he was leaning into the Ted Lasso
thing? Well, no, it's not that. It's just Fred pointed it out, and I'm like, okay, a lot of what Dan tweets has to do with that, you know, what Basin Baseball Awesome or here's
these
Ted
are all
Lasso.
Things he did before Ted Lasso.
But you're missing the point.
Yeah,
the point is now that he has that voice and now that he is on Twitter, you know, everything is painted in that light. And I think while he feels that way a lot, he's just a little bit too over the top with it. I agree with Fred in that regard.
Okay,
yes, that's all.
I haven't noticed a change at all, other than every once in a while he'll put a gif out there of Ted Lasso.
Every once in a while?
Yeah.
It happens. It does.
All right,
I'm
going to Dan Roach's Twitter account.
That was my only point.
That was my only point.
How many Ted Lassos are up there?
I'm through day one, and there's not any.
Oh, there was one yesterday. Hang on,
there's one on October 25th, which is 2 days ago. And he says, love that Jason Sudeikis in his SNL monologue said how it was shocking.
Yeah, you got to go to his replies as well. You got to go to not only his full-on tweets, but his replies, because those show up on your timeline, too.
Oh, okay.
I don't know even what the argument is. I mean, he's all in on this Ted Lasso thing.
Now, Fred, I will say this. Fred is much more bothered about this than
I am. Whoa. I didn't say I was bothered. I just say it was a bombardment. He's like, my Twitter is a bombardment of Roach tweets. Like, I'll give you an example. Yesterday, he tweeted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 with the Ted Lasso, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 times yesterday he tweeted.
Wow. About Ted Lasso?
He tweeted 20 times. Ted Lasso was one of them.
Okay. Well, you see, I guess he always tweets that
so
much.
He tweeted that a Northwestern's women's basketball girl was preseason Big Ten.
That's
he traded the 1969 homecoming football game for the Patriots Jets was at the was where Boston College plays. He tweeted out that there was a new card of Mac Jones, obviously the full Roachie shirt. Mike Tomlinson. He put who are you rooting for the World Series, and then the celebration in the Patriots locker room, the Chris Spielman thing where he starts crying, a Ted Lasso gif, revolution.
That's because he was with the revolution yesterday.
I understand. I know, but it's you act like I'm like saying the guy should be murdered.
No. I just don't see a difference. I don't see a change.
And by the way, if you look the six boxes of the last images he's tweeted, two are Ted Lasso. So of the six images he's tweeted most recently, two of them are Ted Lasso. It's a lot.
I'll tell you what was pretty funny, though. One of his producers, Joe Giza, ended up making a shirt. Do you remember when Dan Shaughnessy was talking about the Red Sox and he said that they've gone full Roachy on that? Well, he made a shirt that said full Roachy on it. And of course, Dan Shaughnessy said, I need you to send me one immediately.
He could probably make some money.
Oh, sure.
He'd have to give it all to charity, though.
Of course he would. That's the Dan Shaughnessy way, or the Dan Roach way.
If he kept a penny of that, I'm calling him out on it. So suffice it to say, this went way longer than I thought it would. But the I didn't know that we were going to have a whole debate about it.
No, I just thought that his persona has not really changed. It's just he's always been Lasso before Ted Lasso.
No. I just think Ted Lasso, the wave of Ted Lassoites has inspired him to push it even further. But all I know is that it was just I'm being bombarded by it. I almost texted him yesterday. I said, please, for the love of God. Because I feel if I unfollowed him, he would know and get upset.
Mute him. That's all you got to do. You mute people.
I know you can mute people, Rich. But I don't
He'll
know.
Never know.
Yeah, then he won't know. Then you just don't see it. I've muted a bunch of people before. Because I know what you're saying is if you unfollow them, they'll know.
Yeah.
And there's people I like, but I'll just mute them.
I mean, I like Roach a lot. I mean, listen. But I've championed him coming on the show from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot. It's a lot. Just people use Twitter with kindness.
be kind in the tweet machine.
Yeah, just use it. If you're in media, please, only when you really got something to say. I'm trying to figure out if fantasy people are hurt. And you're coming at me with some Northwestern basketball shenanigans.
Well, that was Steve Burton's daughter. That's okay. Why I tweeted that out.
All right. Well, fair enough. And which is, if it stood alone with like four other tweets, that would be fine. But if it's 1 to 20, it's a bombardment.
Mm. Steve 20 Burton. Twenty times a lot. 20 times a real lot.
During a day. Yes. When you're not breaking any news, yes.
That's John Dennis-like during the election. That's what that is. That's 20 times. That's a lot.
That's early November John Dennis?
Yes, that's wheelhouse.
That's what's scary. When you lose the microphone and like you just need to get these like thoughts out like so badly. Like, I need to be heard. And you just like get on Twitter. Not, this isn't Roach anymore. This is John Dennis. And you're just like, I need to be heard. Like, I need to be heard, damn it.
That's that special 3-week block right before we all vote. That's what that is. Yes.
That'd be kind of fun. That's got to be a good hate watch. Listen to me. All right, Rich. A fellow broke his leg.
Yeah, that's right. Do we want to break and then come back?
Let's do 3.5 minutes.
All right. Well, in game 1 of the World Series, you knew almost immediately that it was going to be Atlanta's night.
Here's one slam. And he puts Atlanta up 1-0 with a first swing of the Fall Classic.
Well, apparently that was the first time in World Series history that the first batter hit himself a dinger.
It was the first. Put that one in Cooperstown.
Mm-hmm. So the Braves, they never looked back after that. 6-2 was the final score. And by the end of the third inning, Atlanta had scored 5 times. But as we've been mentioning, it really wasn't all sunshine and roses for Atlanta and their ace, Charlie Morton. He was forced to leave the game early, not for any performance reasons, but because of this.
Or off the pitcher's leg for the out. The Braves hope Morton's okay. Looks to be 1-0.
And it's funny, at the time, I didn't realize that's what had happened. So he takes a shot right into his left shin, which at the time, he didn't realize had fractured his fibula. So he stayed in the game and then struck out Chaz McCormick, got Martin Maldonado out with a fly, and then struck out Jose Altuve the next inning. So he went back to the dugout, came out and pitched again. So yes, Morton ended up throwing 96 miles per hour on a broken leg at 37 years old. Now, unfortunately, it was announced that he'll be out for the remainder of the series, and this is how the news was broken.
Altuve strikes out looking for the second time. And after that last pitch for the strikeout of Altuve, Charlie Morton is going to exit. Comes up with a little discomfort. Well, let's check in with Ken Rosenthal with some important news here in Game 1.
Joe, it's not good news. The Braves have announced that Charlie Morton underwent x-rays tonight that revealed a right fibula fracture.
I mean, that was quick. Now, is that the leg that he pushes off the rubber? I'm trying to remember the way he said it is, isn't it?
I don't remember.
Because that's got to suck. Think, I mean, if you have like a broken...
Well, no, your landing foot would hurt more, but nonetheless.
But still, you're on adrenaline. It's game 1 of the World Series. You're probably not feeling much.
So there was one pitch, and it might have been the Altuve one that they kept showing over and over. But when he landed, Fred, you could see him like wince and like, you know, kind of do like a second bounce.
I thought it was his ankle. The way he was looking, he bent over and kind of massage the ankle, and I'm like, okay, he twisted it during the pitch.
Yeah, he's got a microfracture.
So it was, that was Not good. And well, on the other, and by the way,
is it a microfracture or because I thought it was a break?
Well, like that's a still break. A break. No. He wasn't pitching an inning on a clean break.
Because if it's a microfracture, I don't think he would be out all the way until spring training. Because that's what they're saying.
It depends on how you want it to heal. Say it's not a microfracture. It's not the separation of the bone. I mean, he said his leg was bothering him. They did x-ray.
It was the leg he pushes off on, not his plant leg.
All right, would be actually easier. If you had to land on that would be a big pain in the ass. Well, whatever. Suffice it to say, he can't pitch again. And there you go. And by the way, a lot of Braves fans, if you're on Facebook, a lot of people love the Braves. They don't like the Braves when they're not in the World Series.
They're America's team right now. Everybody hates the Astros.
Not me. I'm rooting for the Astros.
Why?
Because of all the annoying Braves fans on Facebook, that haven't been to a Braves game in 75 years that are super Braves fans.
I think people are going to Braves games now. I don't think it's like when we were down there. I think that new stadium has gotten people going.
Is our mutual friend Crash posting about the Braves?
Crash has always worn hats and Crash just bops around. Crash doesn't bother me with that stuff.
Well, one side story that was kind of funny last night in the broadcast was that you could see Astros fans with signs that said the tomahawk chop is racist, referring to, of course, the chopping arm motion. Sure. We've seen it in the chants. Rob Manfred was asked about that before the game because he's got this is becoming a story and he's got a little bit of an issue that he's got to deal with seeing it's on their biggest stage. And his thing was that, well, listen, the Braves have talked to all these Native American leaders and they're cool with it, so I'm cool with it.
Whoa. When the Cardinals played the Red Sox in the playoffs a couple years ago, the Cardinals had a Native American guy on the team, and he said, we got to break in a second, but he said, hey, I got a problem with this. And so they said, all right, we're not giving out the tomahawks and we're not going to do the chop anymore.
Yeah.
So
everyone in the stands is still doing it. They're still doing the tomahawk chop.
If they're doing it, they're doing it on their own. Mm. Like, it's not, the Braves aren't playing the music anymore.
No, because they used to play the drums.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. And now they don't do that anymore. But still, I mean, if you saw any of the NLCS, it was the entire stadium was doing the tomahawk chop.
So the deal with Atlanta is that people move to Atlanta and they've never been more proud of where they lived in their entire lives before they moved to Atlanta. So they'll be like, I'm from Baltimore, like Baltimore rules. Mm-hmm. And then the minute the Braves make the playoffs, they're like, I love the Braves.
Yeah.
No, you can't have it both ways.
It's different now, though, because of that stadium. It changed everything. Like, they've been doing very well in selling out.
Yeah.
Because it's also, now it's almost Fenway-ish. It's like a day out because there's, like, restaurants and stores.
You get to go to Sandy Springs.
Yeah. It's become the thing to do now instead of where it used to be dropped in the middle of nothing in the middle of the city.
Yeah, which was actually my favorite park, which was really
love
fun.
Love Turner Field.
So did I. It's good. All right, here are the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Right now.
It's like they're all on laughing gas.
It's Tusher and Rich.
Keeps slow.
Yeah, everything's in slow motion.
On Boston's home for sports.
These are the kind of people that take snoozes under trees.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Everyone just stop. Just watch the rain and let the doors take it down three from where you were before.
Three Doors Down, one of those bands that was on the radio constantly, yet no one was really a fan.
Nope.
Like, there was a whole era of that music. Like, it was like Three Doors Down. Collective Soul was a band that was like that. Fuel was a band that dominated radio, and no one was really a Fuel fan.
Dominated radio. There was a time that our station, which was one of the biggest alternative stations in the country, was what was the name of the Fuel? I don't even remember the name of it. Whatever it was the most we've ever played.
It was like the most played on that station. Yeah.
Shimmer or Hemorrhage?
It was Hemorrhage in My Hands. Yeah, that was...
Which isn't a good song.
It's fine. But there was just a period of time where these bands were, radio juggernauts, yet they could barely sell out like a 2,000-seater.
All right, so I just bought a book yesterday that is coming on Friday.
because I like to buy books on Amazon where the author gets no compensation. I would buy it from independent booksellers, but I didn't have. I just saw it. It's called Sellout, and it is the story of the raucous history of punk, emo, and hardcore's growing pains during the commercial boom of the early 90s and the mid-aughts, following 11 bands as they sell out and find mainstream fame or break beneath the weight of it all. So in the wake of Nevermind, it follows bands that made it, like Green Day and Blink-182, and then bands that had a huge amount of backlash. Here are the bands: Green Day, Jawbreaker, Jimmy Eat World, Blink-182, At the Drive, and The Donnas, Thursday, The Distillers, My Chemical Romance, Rise Against It, Against Me.
Okay.
It's supposed to be a pretty good book.
Oh, yeah. That sounds fairly interesting.
Because I was part of the system, man, during all that.
Mm-hmm.
I was part of the system.
There's certain bands who got better after they got major label deals. I'll give you the Melvins. The Melvins are one of those bands that the best stuff they ever did was when somebody on Atlantic just sat down and went, dude, you guys need to write a song. And we don't just need to have like feedback noise for like 10 minutes.
And that's why the Melvins are at every graduation.
Every single one.
Everyone sings. Did I do the read for the thing? I'll be listening at 6:55 this morning for your chance to score a pair of tickets to see Warren Miller's Winter Starts Now and be qualified to win a Salt and Wool brand Harbor hat, courtesy of the Maine Office of Tourism.
Well, back in August of 2019, Patrick Chung got into a bit of hot water for possession of a controlled drug.
Hell yeah.
Which was found when police visited his New Hampshire home, but prosecutors at the time, they agreed to drop the charges on the condition that Chung stay out of trouble for 2 years. Well, after this week's news,
a lot of pressure.
I mean, listen, he obviously sounds like he wasn't able to live up to it, because he's more than likely not going to have that happen where that's dropped. Seems like it's going to come right back up, because according to the Boston Globe, Chung allegedly shoved the mother of his son and struck her twice in the face outside her Milton home on Monday. He was arrested and pled not guilty to domestic violence and vandalism charges and was released on a $10,000 bond. Now, the woman whom Chung is accused of attacking ended up obtaining a restraining order against him. Now, she told investigators that around 6:40 p.m. on Monday, she'd receive a frantic call from her son, who had been visiting with Chung. Her son said that Chung was driving fast and that he was, quote, scared of his father's behavior. Now, this woman waited outside her home in the rain until Patrick Chung arrived. When she went to get her son, Chung, quote, turned to her and pushed her, causing her to drop her phone and fall back onto the paved sidewalk, striking her buttocks, lower back area, and her back and neck area, according to the police report. So when she got up to confront Chung, he, according to the report, slapped her in the face. She slapped Chung in retaliation, and he slapped her again in the face before picking her phone up off the ground and throwing it against the house, shattering the screen. Now, Chung drove off. He was later arrested at his home in Norton. So the woman had told authorities that Chung had become enraged at their son and drove him to her house. When Chung pulled into the woman's driveway, he opened up the rear driver's side door to hug his son. As he did, the woman heard Chung say, "Your mom's a piece of blank." So a woman who identified herself as Chung's fiance also testified that the alleged victim had instigated the incident. She said she was driving with Chung as he took his son home. The mother was waiting on the front steps when they arrived and pushed Chung out of the way to get to their son. As he got out of the driver's seat, Chung turned and returned to his seat, the fiance said, but the mother chased him, attempting to close the vehicle's door on Chung's leg and punching him in the face 3 times. Their son was in the back seat when the altercation occurred. According to Chung's fiance, she said Chung did not strike the mother in the face. Now, there was some weirdness that has come out since this on Patrick Chung's Twitter this week. On Sunday, the day before the incident, he wrote, quote, "Hate is a strong word, but there are some people that deserve it. Use it wisely." And shortly before 4 p.m. on Monday, the day that everything happened, he wrote, quote, "Best day of my life." So we will find out soon what's going to happen with Patrick Chung. But as for now, he is out on, I think, $10,000 bail. He is out and about. So interesting story. But it is weird that he had gotten off on the charges. I think it was it cocaine that they ended up saying that
yes.
they found in his house
cocaine
in New Hampshire?
Possession, yes.
That's what I thought it was. So, I mean, he was basically scot-free. If for just a couple of more months, he would have had no other incidents, and now this happens, and so it's double bad for him. It's not just what he's been accused of in the past couple of days, but now that's going to come back. And that's, assault, battery, and cocaine possession. I mean, that's something that I would think that possible jail time.
If these charges are true.
Yeah.
If you have two differing accounts here.
That's true. So we will find out. I'm sure that we'll all end up getting washed out right there. Now, do we want to talk about the Mike Tomlin thing here, or do you want to wait a couple minutes?
No, we'll wait.
Okay, because there's a lot to it. There's a lot to that one. Okay, then in the meantime, how about this? The Jack Eichel rumors are not going away when it comes to the Boston Bruins and their interest. Now,
I would like Gordie Howe as well.
Well,
you give me someone who used to be good.
Well, we know obviously that Eichel wants out. He has made that explicitly clear over the past offseason. Things not going so well with Buffalo, where he refused to get his surgery, and now how much money is he on the hook for?
He didn't refuse to get the surgery. At issue is how the surgery is done. The Sabres want him to undergo spinal fusion surgery. Meanwhile, he has a herniated disc in his neck. The Sabres want him to undergo spinal fusion surgery. What Eichel wants is disc replacement surgery, which is experimental, especially on a hockey player, has not been done.
Right. The disc replacement surgery is something that, like John said, I'm just repeating, actually, is experimental. It's not been done on a hockey player. I'm repeating John again. And the team, it really doesn't want him to get it. I'm wondering if they traded Eichel, if he would agree to the spinal fusion surgery. But then again, what are you going to give up for Eichel?
He's got, I think, 5 years and $50 million on that contract. Yeah. I mean, that's a huge risk.
Right.
For a cap-killing contract.
Well, it's not just that, but apparently the Sabres are asking in return something equal to 4 first-round picks.
Forget it.
As a matter of fact, it's being quoted as your best prospects in picks.
That was how it was summarized this summer.
No.
You don't know how he's going to come through this.
No.
Regardless of what
procedure he has.
No. Not a chance.
No.
You buy 20 cents on the dollar if they'll agree to it, which it doesn't seem like Buffalo is. I'm not touching that.
I wouldn't even pay him. I wouldn't trade for him for anything. I mean, this sounds... I mean, he's just sitting around injured. I mean, he can't be getting any better. When was the last time he played hockey?
Early last season.
Yeah, so, I mean...
It's been about a year.
Yeah, and it's going to be another year before he plays. Once they decide what he's going to have the surgery, then he's got to recover from that, and you have no idea if he's ever going to play hockey again.
Well, Sportsnet's Elliot Friedman was asked point blank about the Bruins and Eichel, and he said that the Bruins have certainly sniffed around. He said, quote, "I think the Bruins have been around there. There's no question about that." So it sounds like they are keeping in constant contact with Buffalo to kind of see what the status is and whether they're going to drop their asking price maybe Buffalo would be willing to give up some of the salary. I mean, who knows what they're going to do.
Okay, well, that's something different. If Don Sweeney's just doing his due diligence and keeping in contact, that's one thing. But there's a difference between sniffing around and making a push.
By the way, like Taylor Hall, remember, at one point was as big a deal as Jack Eichel ever was.
Well,
and
number one overall pick in the draft.
Right, and so, you know, and he was healthy. And you got him, and he's your second line winger.
Yeah,
he's a second line winger. So, I mean, we're remembering Jack Eichel as this, you know, huge prospect and this number one pick and this kid that shined early in his career. I mean, you just got Taylor Hall for basically nothing, and he was just about as big a deal as Jack Eichel, and he's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So why would I go through all this rigmarole? I mean, we just got Taylor Hall. Same difference. Yeah. Get Sagan, Hall, Eichel,
also
put them all together.
The thing is, too, you know, money-wise, when does Pastrnak's contract expire?
I think there's one more after this one.
I mean, because they're going to obviously give him the farm. I mean, and they've already got McAvoy's new contract. And Bergeron, you're going to have to re-sign him if he's going to stick
Bergeron's
around for a little bit.
Not going to be an issue, money-wise.
I was right. Pastrnak has this year, next year, and then he's an unrestricted free agent.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, well, then you can't go around spending $10 million a year for 5 years on a guy that you have no idea how he's going to perform.
No, they're not going to. No one's trading for Eichel.
The only thing I could see is if Buffalo's just sick of it and done, and they're going to eat a lot of the contract.
That's what I was going to say.
And
you pay 20 cents on the dollar, yeah.
I still wouldn't do it.
It depends on how low it is. I mean, it really does.
I wouldn't do it. I'd make moves at the deadline to improve this team. I wouldn't. You don't need Jack Eichel. Forget about Jack Eichel. There's plenty of other people playing hockey right now. Don't worry so much about Jack Eichel. Go and get your business done. You know, win now. Get into the trade deadline. See where you're at as a team and make the decisions you got to make.
if you're, you know, make if you're making a big push in the East, all of a sudden Florida's the greatest thing that's ever happened. Carolina's outstanding.
If, guess who the Bruins played the next two nights?
Yeah, exactly. So
Florida then Carolina.
Well, at the trade deadline, this is a big trade deadline.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have to assess the future. And because, you know, if you want to go, you got to, because you can't half-ass it. You got to go one way or the other. Yeah. You got to start unloading some assets.
This could be Bergeron's last year.
Yes. Yep. You got to unload some assets, or you got to go all in. And all in is not Jack Eichel playing in a year. Screw Jack Eichel playing in a year. That doesn't concern me at all. The Bruins are now, right now, big first half of the season for the Bruins. Billy Jaffe on at 9 o'clock to spill the beans on a lot of insider stuff. Car number 10 right now to the Pride Motor Group contest line, 617-931-0985. We'll score a pair of tickets to see Warren Miller's Winter Starts Now. Warren Miller, who's been around since I've been on radio in Cumming, Georgia, and will be qualified to win a Salt and Wool brand Harbor hat, courtesy of the good people at the Maine Office of Tourism. And that, my friends, is what you get when you go big. All right, so we'll be back with Mike Tomlin and his comments yesterday.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.